Phil Hendry Show. And we've made $91,317 with the number one rated Phil Hendry Show Best of the Year 2000 CD or picture disc for My Friend's Place, a resource center for homeless and runaway kids in Hollywood. 877-616-7445 to order the number one rated Phil Hendry Show Best of the Year 2000 CD or vinyl picture disc. $20 for the CD, $3.50 shipping and handling. Will take Visa, MasterCard, or check, and you just call that number. And that's what that is, and we'll do another one next year. And some other things that we have on tap. So I bought this 1958 Volkswagen the other day from my dear friend Mr. Taylor here. I told you that he had this Volkswagen Bug. I said, yeah, I'll buy that off of you, man. I said, how much? $1,500. And I've just had the oil changed, and I just did this and that. And I saw it. It was really sweet. We went out to the garage on Friday night after the show, and there sitting there, it's a 58 Bug with the original Wallencraft. What is it, a Wallencraft engine?
No, it's
the original, right? It's a Wallencraft, right?
Wolfsburg.
What's a Wallencraft? That's a sewing machine, right? So anyway, it's the original Wolfsburg, whatever the hell. It's the original engine, and it's 42. It's a 42-year-old engine. God knows how many miles this thing has on it, 8 million miles. But it's pretty clean, and for a 42-year-old car, it's sweet-looking. It doesn't have a lot of dings, and, you know, it had some minor problems, like it was tough for me to adjust the seat. But, Jesus, these are the original bucket seats in the thing. Some of the springs are gone. The radio ain't the greatest, but it's a brand new radio. It's just that it's got the single speaker in the back, right? Is that two speakers? And also, you know, getting used to not having, you know, power steering or power brakes, because you're used to that. So, but that's cool. So I said, okay, Craig, thanks a lot, man. He says, yeah, no problem. So I turn this thing on. I'm wheeling out of the garage in this, and I notice that the brakes are a little low. Like maybe it needs fluid. So I pump a little bit, brakes come back, I'm cool. I'm thinking, okay, I know that I almost got to go all the way to the floor to get the brakes on this thing. So that's just a thing you got to keep in mind because you're clutching and you're braking and you're, you know, you're doing all those things that you're, you know, since we've got automatic transmissions, how many people really are proficient at driving a stick anymore? So, other than me, I pull out, I get into this thing, and I get it up onto the freeway, and I'm on my way home, going up the 405 and then out to the 101. I'm heading west on the 101. And I'm cruising along at about 55. I really got it going up to about 60, you know, and I swung it over to the right two lanes because there's guys, you know, when you're going 55 or 60 miles an hour because you're in an older car, you suddenly realize what a big fat hurry everybody else is in and what a huge problem you are in their life. Because they're going 900 miles an hour. They're doing 80. They're doing 85. They're doing 90. God forbid that anybody does the speed limit. Because it's almost like if you do the speed limit, you're not a man. You know, you got to, what are you doing? I'm doing 55, the speed limit. Why, you wuss? Get it up there. You know what I mean by get it up, don't you? Get it up to 80. So there I got big headlights in my rearview mirror, you know, just brr, brr. I don't care. I'm in my little Volkswagen Bug, and I'm sailing, you know, and I'm digging it. And I got the radio on. I've even got the radio tuned to KPFK. I got it on some Pacifica station, you know, some liberal left-wing thing that reminds me of, what do you mean I am a wuss? It's a freaking Volkswagen. The only radio station you should be allowed to play in that thing is KPFK. And I'm listening to some cat, you know.
The Bush inauguration was another fascist demonstration of the entrenched Nazis that run this country. Here is Irving Bernstein in Washington.
No more, you know, whatever. There's a whole thing, a bunch of people going ape. And I was there at the corner of K Street where the police moved in. Bull crap. What are you talking about, man? I didn't hear about any cops moving in. But it was really cool, you know. So I'm sailing along, 60, 65. There's Joan Rivers again. How long is she going to be on the Larry King show before her face just drops right off? It's been chiseled into so much. So I'm cruising along, and here comes my exit, Lynn Road, out in T.O. And I swing it off, and Lynn Road kind of does a little turn before it goes right up to the top, and there's a red light. And oh, my God, I go to hit the brakes, and I got none. And I mean I'm hitting floor. It sounds like this. And it was one of those things, you know, if you're doing 55, 60 miles an hour and you suddenly go for brakes and there's no brakes there, the first thing that comes out of your mouth is like, oh, God! It's involuntary. At that instant, you know, You want to know what kind of a man you are? Just listen to yourself when your brakes aren't there and you're going 60 and there's a red light coming up within 100 yards. Okay! So I'm hitting it and there's nothing, man. So I did the only other thing I got. It was too late to downshift. I would have, the gearbox would have flown off this thing if I tried downshifting. I go for the emergency brake. I went for the full enchilada, pull the emergency brake up, figuring, well, if these brakes ain't working, this one probably isn't working too good either, but maybe the combination of the two, pulled that emergency brake up and started pumping the brake, and gradually, slowly, I began to notice the speed, the velocity of the car began to mitigate a bit. I noticed that things were slowing down, and I knew that I was going to live, maybe. But as I came to a stop at the light and my heart is like racing, I realized, oh, God, that was like frightening. So now I turn and I'm on my way home and I'm thinking, am I dead? Maybe I died. Nobody can escape that. Maybe I'm dead. I know what I'll do. When I get home, if anybody acknowledges me as I come through the door, I'll know that I'm alive. But if no one acknowledges my presence, I'll know I'm dead. So the first person I see as I come to the door is little Catherine there with her thumb jammed in her mouth, and she's watching the Rugrats movie on TV. Something like that. And I said, I didn't say anything. I just walked in. I walked by her, and she looked up, and she said, oh, hi, and then went back to the Rugrats movie. That's when I knew I was alive, that I hadn't died, because I had this sense that my life came to a bitter screeching halt. And then the next thing I did, Maria gets home, and I go, I'm calling Craig. So I called you, man, but you weren't here. You were sick. I got to go get the brakes fixed on that thing. And I said to everybody, see these keys? Nobody gets to use these keys but me. The brakes don't work. And so that little game that I play with the kids in the morning to get their minds off of school and get them thinking in a creative fashion, a little game called Oh My God, the Brakes Are Out, it came true for me Friday night going home. And let me tell you, it was freaky, man. But anyway, I got that thing. It was parked in front of my house. You should have seen the people commenting on that. Oh, who's the Volkswagen? But you know, you got an old Volkswagen parked in front of your house. Suddenly, everybody is like rapping about it. Everybody wants to know about the new vans that are coming out. Everybody wants, you know, they're coming out with a new Volkswagen van that's going to have all that stuff that the old one did. But I'd rather have the old one because I don't want them to make the new one look as crappy as they make the new Bug look. Or do you like the new Bug? Which I don't, you know. So, yeah, you get one of those things parked in front of your car. And, of course, to the kids, I remember when my old man first drove home with a 1936 Ford. My folks, when I was a kid, we had one car. We had a 56 Mercury. And that was the car that, you know, my dad took to work in the morning, or he would carpool with another guy up the street to get into L.A. But I guess my mom bitched enough, or they figured they could afford a second car finally, so in addition to the 56 Mercury, one day, here comes my old man down the street in a 36 Ford, 1936. The kind with the three on the tree, you're trying to get it into gear and it's just grinding away. This thing was a three or four on the tree, 36 Ford, and I thought that thing was a relic. I remember looking at it. We even gave it a name. We called it Betsy. Because I guess that's what you call old cars, right? We said, let's get in Betsy and go to the market in this thing. Anyway, make a long story short, that's probably how the kids are looking at this Volkswagen sitting out on the street. Look at that old piece of crap. Hey, honey, yeah, somebody left their garbage out in front of the house. That's my new car. Oh, I'm sorry. It actually looks pretty sweet, man. I like the paint job on it. I think it's nice. And you know what? What recycling is coming on Wednesday, and if the car isn't there, I'll know they just, oh, look at this garbage. You know, they'll just pick it up and throw it. You know, you really know you need help with your car when the recycling truck pulls up and throws your car into the back along with all the cans. I'll wait and see. I've got to get my car off the street before Wednesday. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry Show. I was looking at Joan Rivers here a moment ago on television. I commented that her face is completely changed. It's not even the same face. And I wonder what it's like to have plastic surgery where you're looking in the mirror and it's no one that you know anymore. How bad, seriously, how bad do you have to look before you want to look in the mirror and see something else. How ugly do you have to be? Now, I'm not talking about people that have had scarring or surgery because of accidents. I'm talking about the face the good Lord freaking gave you. The face you came into the world with. How bad has it got to look for you to go to the doctor and change it the way she did? Joan Rivers went to the doctor and basically changed every single thing about her face. She had her eyes widened, the nose made smaller. She got some of that fat pumped into her lips. Have you ever seen people, what do they call that? The collagen in the lips? Oh, man. I don't know where I was the other day. I was sitting at in a restaurant somewhere, and there was a girl sitting across from me. Man, she had the big, they had pumped her lips full, and she was just like, hi, you know, with the big fat lips, like the, you know, those ashtray lips. And she was just, it was like, whoa. Pretty soon you look like a cartoon. Or a cartoon. It's like the Stones logo. Yeah, that big, the lips are just pumped full of fat. Isn't that what that is? Is it fat? They pump extra fat into your lips. So I guess you're supposed to be looking like, what are you supposed to look like? Like Betty Boop or something. Something. Well, the point I'm trying to make here is, what you're supposed to look like, there is no human model for. It's a cartoon. It's Jessica Rabbit. There are women who saw Jessica Rabbit's body in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and they said, I want that body. Well, I'm sorry, but her waist, if we were to actually, you know, you'd have a 4-inch waist. I want that body. I want to look like that. That means we have to remove ribs. I don't care. We have to pump silicone into your rear end. We have to pump a record-breaking amount of silicone into your chest. I don't know that there is enough silicone. I still want that. We have to do your hair, your face. The whole thing's got to be redone. The eyes, the nose, the lips, the everything. And then what else do you want? I want the, you know, so she's, in other words, the model is some fantasy. It's not a human. Because some of these collagen shots these people get in their lips, they look like cartoons, the big cartoon lips. They ought to put that on the thing, the plastic surgeon, cartoon lips, only $29.95 today at Dr. Mengele's. Hello, I'm Dr. Mengele, and, you know, I did some things in the war I'm not proud of.
Well, aren't you the guy that tortured people?
Yes, I did. I tortured people.
What are you doing now?
Collagen shots, you know, breast implants.
I don't know.
Look, I'm changed, I swear. I won't do anything.
I'm Jewish.
I swear to God, I'm not going to do anything. Why don't you come in for an ass lift and we'll see what we can do? Well, you're Dr. Mengele, the guy that did the whole... Yes, I am.
Well, you're going to jail, man. I ain't coming in for a collagen shot in the lips.
Man, I'm trying to make ends meet. I'm turning over a new leaf. I make you look beautiful.
Yeah, sure. I'm sorry. I like my Jewish face.
Well, okay. That's the statement I'm trying to make. It's not I don't like Jews. It's the nose. That's all I want to do.
Nope, I'm not going to do it. Get out of here. You're going to jail. You're going to prison. Go down to Brazil and kill yourself.
Okay.
I hate you. By the way, I came up with a phrase. The kids, I don't know if you're aware of this, but today's young adolescent males use the phrase, that's gay, a lot. It's very common. My guys do it. Any teenage boy out there, they're using that phrase. Oh, that's really gay. And, you know, I find it a little bit offensive only because I'm trying to, you know, we're trying to be responsible parents and have the kids be at least egalitarian enough and open-minded enough not to judge people. You know, but what are you going to do? They're kids. They're subject to the culture. And it's become a phrase that kids use. That's gay. It's really gay. Now, the word we don't let them use is fag. Of course, they say, we use it on your show. That's different, and you shouldn't be listening to my show, and I'm going to beat you if you say that again.
Okay.
But you are not allowed to use the F-A-G word in the house. You got that? It's the same as the N-word.
Well, okay, but I heard...
And then, of course, they start squealing on each other. Hey, Phil,
yeah, I heard Chris use the F-A-G word.
You know, so they're squealing, and then I got to go into a whole speech about, you really squeal on each other?
Well, you said they shouldn't use F-A-G.
Well, yeah, but I don't want you guys reporting to me like I'm the commissioner of police. I said, why do you guys got to say that? That's gay. How about this new phrase? So I was thinking about it, and I came up with a phrase that I think they may like. I'm going to spring this on them tonight. It's a euphemism that they can use for something being gay. And that the phrase is glows in the dark. So you could say to another guy, man, you glow in the dark. And you could be calling him gay, and it's not offensive. In other words, is it the phrase? Is it the intent, or is it just the harshness of the word gay and the FAG word? Is that what we're really worried about? How harsh those words sound like? Look at this. Taylor ain't buying it at all. Well, I don't know. I got to come up with something. In other words, I'm hearing gay and fag everywhere I turn around. Every time I turn around, the kids are looking at me and calling me a fag.
You're a stepdad. You can be a fag.
So I was thinking, I told Maria she loved it. I said, why don't you guys use the phrase, man, you glow in the dark. What's wrong with that? Forget it, man. I'm just trying to think of these things, okay? By the way, we saw Castaway. That was a great flick. That was really an awesome flick. Very intense movie. The plane crash scene is fantastic. I remember I used to on my show, I would give away how movies ended, and people got so upset. I won't do it anymore, okay? I'll just tell you that he does make it back to dry land, which I'm sure you realize that he would, and that he, you know, loses his wife. But I won't say anything else. And anyway, this movie, the plane crash scene in this film, is just about the most spectacular, intense, the greatest, you know, experience that I've had in a movie in a long time. Now, maybe it's because I have a fear of heights. I've never had a fear of flying, but I do have a fear of heights. And that comes into play when this plane suddenly goes out of control and they have to ditch it in the Pacific Ocean. And the way they filmed that, man, and especially, most especially, after the plane crashes and this character, Tom Hanks's character gets out of the plane and gets up to the raft on the surface of the ocean, is the most incredible thing to see. This ocean with 20-foot waves as he's hanging on for dear life while this flaming carcass of this jet slowly sinks into the Pacific. And he's all alone. It's raining harder than it's ever rained. It's a monsoon. It's windy. The guy's in a raft. And his whole life is over. I mean, this jet's going down. Never mind that three or four guys died in the jet. We're not concerned with that. I'm really worried about Tom Hanks. And then he goes onto the island and the whole thing. Now, this guy's a worker for Federal Express. And the product, it's a great movie, but you're going to notice there's heavy product placement in this movie. And if you know what product placement is, it's literally where a corporation, a company, pays to have their name mentioned in a film. And Federal Express comes out of this thing smelling like a rose. They are made to look like the greatest company in the world, the most efficient company in the world, the most compassionate people in the world. I mean, I use Federal Express. I like them, so who am I to say? But, geez, I don't know how much money they had to pay to get Federal Express's kisser all over this movie, but it was something. And then it shows him collecting all the packages on the beach, and he's going to, sort them out, and he's going to return those packages to the people until we realize this guy's there for 4 years, and he starts busting into the packages and using all the crap. And I say crap, I really don't. Well, yeah, it looked like crap to me. Nothing he could use. There was no food. I kept waiting for him to open up a box, and maybe there'd be some candies or chocolates or something in it. But it was a great movie. You saw it, Craig, didn't you? You got to go see it, Mike. There was no fruitcake or anything, no booze, you know, no smokes, no tobacco. But really an intense flick, and I'm glad I saw that as opposed to, I got talked into it because I wanted to go see. But, you know, Nick was with us this weekend, the 15-year-old, and he wanted to see Castaway. I said, okay, let's do it. And the freaking theater was packed. Packed. So this movie must still be doing the kind of business that, you know, Titanic did. Because it's the same kind of a big movie, so it was really cool. Anyway. And then did you see the Golden Globes last night? Did you see Cameron Mannheim? She's a very nice lady and very attractive lady, but she's a little heavy set. At the Golden Globes, you have to walk between tables to get up to the podium. And I don't know, you know, I mean, I don't want to be cruel, but they must have had her backstage. It's real crowded. They're all tables. Everybody's getting toasted. They're eating. Actually, I didn't see anybody eat. And Maria said to me, no, I did. I saw one of them had a fork to their mouth. Because they're at tables, and I don't know what. By the time Al Pacino made his speech, were they still on the salad? I don't understand. I didn't see waiters or anything. When does the meal take place in this deal? And that Farouk dude from the foreign press.
Hello, let me tell you about Will and Grace. It's my favorite.
Anyway, Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry Show at 1-800-449-8686. A lot of people don't like Helen Hunt. I know you're saying, wait a minute, everybody loves Helen Hunt. A lot of people don't like her. A lot of people flat, I mean, I'm talking about men and women, don't like her. And I don't think it's they don't like her, but the characters she plays, the characters that she plays, on the surface look like they're okay, but when you dig deep enough, they're not, you know, they're selfish, selfish women. And Craig was just saying this about this movie Castaway. You got to see this movie. Now you tell me, you go see this movie. Now they're gonna try to sell you the idea that her character was a feeling, loving woman who had to move on with her life, really wanted to love him, but had an obligation to her family as well. That's what they're going to try to sell you. But what you're getting, and what the, I don't even think the director or the guy who wrote the script could see it. I don't think they could even see it. But I swear to God, what you get is a woman who, after Tom Hanks comes back from this island, he's gone through 4 years of an unbelievable experience. He's been separated from friends, from family, from culture, from life. He's been isolated, and he's been in a fight for his life to survive. And he finally makes it back. And not once. Now, this is the woman that was in love with him, and they were going to be married as soon as he got back. Not once does she ask him how he is. Not once does she get the subject off of her, her life, herself, how she feels, her stinking rotten kid, and her orthodontist husband, and how she's moved on, and only the thing. In other words, you think a good scriptwriter fashioned this movie, but he blew it. He really dropped the ball in that part of the movie, the very end of the movie, where she doesn't give a crap about him. It's all about her. And even when she runs down the driveway, when she runs after him, when she's going to get in the car and be with him, it's not about, I love you and I want you to feel better. It's about, oh, I think I want you. Oh, you know what? I changed my mind. In other words, she's a capital B-I-T, or as Melissa would say, she's a witch with a B. She doesn't give a crap about this guy. The whole thing about this Helen Hunt character in this movie is me, 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 I, what I went through. Oh, it was so hard, and I had to move on, and I wasn't doing that. And all he's talking about is her. He's there. He says, how are you? And what are you doing? And tell me about your life. And tell me about what's going on. In one part of the movie, he says, it's funny, he says, let me get this straight. We have a football team in Tennessee, but it's not in Memphis. It's in Nashville, because he's been gone. So all she does is talk about herself, and then the stupidest part of this movie, which it was a good movie, but the dumbest part of this movie, is she busts out. Now, this is the way people in Hollywood think. This isn't the way real people are, but this is the way people in Hollywood think it would be. She busts out his press clippings. Look at this. Here's Time Magazine, and here's when you were in the New York Times, and here's when they found you on the raft. Oh, that's great, yeah. Thank you. And look, I clipped them all out. Like, the guy's life amounts to these clippings in the freaking New York Times, when in point of fact, maybe he needs a little love, maybe he needs a... She doesn't ask him anything about his life. She doesn't ask him anything about what he was doing over there. She doesn't ask him... I would be, personally, filled with questions. I mean, I'd grab a bottle of Rebel Yell, I'd put it on the table with two glasses, and I'd say, let's take a few hours, I want to hear this story. Can we talk? And I wouldn't have to go and get my nose done like Joan Rivers. Neither. But she didn't do that. So that was really perceptive of you, man. And when I think back on the movie, I think that's the same thing. She plays these characters that you're supposed to like. You ever get the idea about Helen Hunt that they want you to like the character she's playing? You wind up, you don't? Who's blowing it with her anyway? Who's the guy that's giving her strips? And she's playing these characters, you're supposed to really like them, and you wind up like, Jesus. Like, I saw that What a Women Want thing. That sucked. The character she played was, I don't know. But the point being that in that movie, they really dropped the ball when it comes to that that relationship. Not to mention the fact that just thinking about, you know, product placement in all of these movies, these people, you know, Federal Express being in this movie is fine. I got no problem with that at all. I don't. I had a little bit of a problem with Taco Bell being a Demolition Man because I don't think that'll be the restaurant that survives. But what do I know? And you know what? Good for Reese's Pieces. They're all over E.T. I get it already. Yes. M&M's blew it. Yes. You know what? M&M's ain't hurting at all. Yeah, E.T. might have put Reese's Pieces on the map. M&M's is still kicking their rear end. I'm serious. And they're talking about, boy, just think, M&M's could have been an E.T. Well, you know, they weren't. They're making money hand over fist. And then what was that other one that I saw? America Online and You Got Mail. And everybody was bellyaching about that. Who saw You Got Mail? I didn't even see that movie. Which, by the way, did you guys see the Golden Globes last night? Russell Crowe was there by himself. Meg Ryan was nowhere to be seen. My wife is sitting there behind me, Maria. She's going, he dumped her. Well, how do you know that? He dumped her. He doesn't want the baggage, the two kids and her. She's nuts. She's out of control. He dumped her. That's what I heard. You heard that? Yes, I did. He told her to take a flying freaking Finienza, man. She's nowhere to be seen. So what he did is he had a couple of giggles with her on the set. She leaves her husband. She's ready to move in with the two kids. Excuse me. May I take you aside, Miss Ryan? You don't know me. My name's Phil Hendry.
Yeah.
I have nothing to do with your life or Mr. Crow's, but can I just clue you in on something?
Well, what?
He's a very eligible young bachelor, one of the top movie stars in the world right now. Why does he want you and your two kids?
Well, he loves me.
Yeah. Let me just explain what it means when a man says he loves you. Where were you when he said that? He loves sex, lady.
But, I mean, I've got my two children, and Dennis and I have got the divorce. And you
know where Dennis is?
I don't know. He's on the set of that lousy movie. What was it? The Traffic?
Yeah. Go find him. Go get back in the traffic and find him. Russell Crowe's there without Meg Ryan. So anyway, but to make a long story short, that flick was pretty good, that Castaway, except for that Helen Hunt. What a bitch. Okay. Moving along. And by the way, now Golden Globes, when they brought that guy out, Farouk, from the Egyptian Bugle or whatever the... I'm trying to figure out here. This is the Hollywood Foreign Press. These cats are in town. They're from Egypt. They're from Sri Lanka. These guys come in from Lapland. They're you know, China, wherever. These guys are in there. And they're telling me about what's hot on American TV, Malcolm in the Middle. What's some cat in Sri Lanka? You're going to be putting me on. And that guy got up there...
Thank you. The Hollywood Foreign Press wishes to...
Only this guy from Egypt is up there. He's the president of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, and he really loved the South Park movie. And Beavis and Butthead, Big Ten in India.
I got to tell you, I don't care about sunshine. Screw it.
But Porky's, I mean, and when they, American Pie 2, that's what he really wanted to vote for, but the hell with it. But you did. You had to squeeze through the podium there because they had this thing up there. It was, you know, it was all the tables were squeezed together. I was thinking I couldn't do it because I just had my physical on Monday, as you know. Two Mondays ago, I had my physical, and I went in today to get the test results, okay? Now, here I am. I'm 48. I haven't had a physical in 11 years. And I was nervous. I haven't had a physical. I'm overweight, 48. Hadn't had a physical in 11 years. Smoke. You know, I used to smoke really heavy. I mean, I have like a cigarette a weekend now, but I was a heavy smoker for a long time. And pretty much don't do any exercise. So I go into the doctor. I'm thinking, oh, God, man. He's got to find something wrong with me. He's got to. That's what am I paying him for? I want you to find cancer. What the hell are you talking about? Just find something. I'm going to give you a physical, man. If I don't find anything, is that okay, too? Well, all right. This guy ran every freaking test. This guy ran blood pressure till I wanted to cry. He ran blood tests. Then he did this Doppler thing where they check to see how your circulation is in your legs and to see how your cardiovascular is and the PSA on my prostate gland because I had a vasectomy. So you got to kind of watch that. All this bull crap. And I'm sweating it, and I'm worrying about it. And then I get the word last week, the doctor called, and he wants to talk to you about one of his tests. I'm thinking, there it is, okay. That's the one. There it is. Cancer. Heart attack. Heart risk. Heart disease. Something, you know. Calls you and says, hi, Phil, I want to talk to you about your cholesterol. I said, really? He says, yeah, it's a little high. Is there anything else? No, it's good. Everything else is fine.
said, but your cholesterol's high. I said, what? Well, normal's 200, you're at 245. And then the other cholesterol, 130, you're at 161. I said, what should I do? Stop eating so much, you fat freak. Oh, yes, sir, okay. You got it. Cut out the starch, cut out the eggs, cut out the dairy. Just cut it out, will you? Just quit it. Quit looking at me. And get out of my office and just pay at the desk as you leave. Thank you. You're welcome. Eat some green vegetables. Ever heard of them? Spinach. Oh, I see, more salads. Doesn't have to be salads. Green beans. By the way, we don't take your insurance. There was a guy ahead of me at the doctor's office, by the way. I saw the sign-in sheet. I swear to God, it said Bill Murray, and his insurance carrier was like Motion Picture something. I said, wow, I wonder if he's back there. So I started going into examining rooms, you know. They threw me out. And we don't validate your parking either. Get out of here. So all I got to do now is get the cholesterol down in a month. I got to get it down to, I don't know what it's, below 200 and below 130 on that one thing. And, oh, yeah, another prostate exam. Because the PSA ain't enough. He's got to stick the rubber glove in there. That's just great. I may be late for that appointment. Look at this. Taylor can't dig it. Why not, man? Why not? Why? What is wrong with bending over and having another guy with a rubber glove on shoving his finger up there, huh? Nothing wrong with that at all. That's fine. That's a normal thing. That's just like having your heart checked, having the guy with a cold stethoscope, taking blood pressure, bend over, pull your pants down. Okay, this is the only time in my life I will ever willingly do this for another guy. I understand that. I just want you to know, this is the only time in my life that I will ever willingly do anything like this for another guy. I understand. Just bend over. And would you not keep saying bend over? And what's that? It's a little lubrication. Swell, that's great. That completes the circle there, man. I want that on my chart. I want you to write it down. The only time Henry ever does this is for a doctor. Because everything that any heterosexual man, any man, would fear happens in that instant. Lubrication, straight hard thing, you're bent over, goes up your butt. What more do you need to heap on a man? It's happening to me in 4 weeks. Laugh it up, you guys. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show. Ow. This is the Phil Henry Show.
Yes, sir. If he believes that he's discovered all that, he ought to watch TV on the Discovery Channel.
What's that?
They've had TV cars with sails on them, like sailboats trying to produce, automobiles by wind.
That's a sailboat. I'm talking about.
No, they've tried it with automobiles. It will not work.
You can have a wind-powered car. It's where you put the sails. Where'd they put the sails on this car?
They've tried them on all of it, the front, the sides, the back, under it.
What about
and everything?
Okay, let me ask you this. My idea to transport things over water would save this country millions of dollars a month.
What do you mean, transport it over water?
I mean using the water as a highway for transporting freight. Right now they're flying stuff.
What do you think the ships do with oil and cargo and all that? How do you think it gets everywhere?
My understanding is that they fly the oil here.
No.
They do not fly oil here.
They don't fly oil.
I don't think you've discovered anything.
No,
I don't think you know what you're talking about.
Wait a minute, sir. What are your credentials?
My credentials is my name, and I went to high school and graduated, and I've been around 42 years. And I've seen this. I've been there.
I'm talking about...
You're talking about a bunch of stuff,
sir,
that you don't know nothing about.
No, sir. Just because you watch the Discovery Channel doesn't mean you have a degree in... I have a degree in mechanical physics from Caltech University in Los Angeles.
Well, I can say I've got the same thing.
Oh,
prove it. Prove it. You're being ignorant.
Prove it?
Yes.
All I'm saying is that...
All you're saying is you invented this, you invented that, when that's been out years ago. My kids have done outgrowed that solar stuff.
No, your kids didn't build no air-powered or wind-powered car. And if word got out that
why don't they make cars for wind-up rubber bands? They've had them for years. you know, for toys and stuff.
I think automobiles with wind-up rubber bands is a good idea. You need a heavy-duty rubber, though.
Wait a second. Wind-up?
He's goofy.
No, I'm not goofy. Look,
yeah.
What's E equal?
Do what?
What's MC square equal?
I told you, I didn't go to all that college. Like,
all right.
You know, I'm not going to get over here and say I done
means,
this and I done that.
That means I know more. And I
no,
can tell
it,
everybody. Look,
it,
okay.
If you know more, how in the world do you not know about these solar and rechargeable batteries and all that stuff? It's just like an alternator and a battery on a vehicle.
Well, no, because
my idea
was to use the sun's energy to heat up water. All you got to do is put.
You talked about Columbus.
Right. Yeah.
How do you think they got their cargo around the world?
Columbus was just going to discover America. He wasn't shipping oil or nothing, okay?
He didn't haul no kind of groceries or nothing like that in
only what they were going to eat, what they bought at the store before they left.
Did they not trade when they went from country to country and stuff?
Well, I mean, trade was,
oh, yeah.
You know?
Okay, there you go.
Well,
there you
maybe
go.
You got me on that one, okay? I'll give you that. But
wait a second.
It's about time you give somebody credit for something because you don't have no credibility at all.
But you're saying that Columbus took his groceries to North America, and I'm saying, yeah, because they didn't have stores yet.
Well, then where did he get them?
He bought the groceries at a market in Spain to eat when he was going to America. Then he got to America. There's no stores there.
Then, well, what did the people in North America do for groceries? They ain't got grocery
stores
back then. They got trading posts.
The Indians don't eat groceries.
What do they eat then?
Well, they eat like tree bark and stuff. I don't know.
Well, you're goofy.
I'm goofy.
Those other people won't say it or nothing, but you're a liar.
Okay, that hurts.
You need to go back. You need.
You call me a liar.
That needs to hurt.
I would say that really hurts me because I've been working.
That don't hurt half as bad as what you're telling people. And everything about yourself. That
Scott,
should hurt you more than anything.
Scott Norwell came in from outside with a bucket of water that was hot. And I said, how'd you do that? He said, I left it in the sun.
Well, that's been around. Make sun tea. How long has that been around? Set a gallon of water out in the sun with tea bags in it. It heats it up and makes the tea.
I thought you had to boil the water first, then put it in the sun.
No, sir. Never mind, Scott.
Well, I mean, Scott Norwell's going to be disappointed.
Okay, can I jump in?
What?
Yes, sir.
I let me say that James is right.
James is right about what? Wind-powered cars?
I mean, James, I don't know about that because I didn't see that, but he's right about sun tea, okay? Because my wife makes it.
She puts it out in the sun and then heats it up.
I believe so.
And, you can knock me over with a feather.
Can I interrupt again?
Go ahead.
You know, an old Indian man told me once, he said, you know, this world's crazy. He says, you know, they heat water up to make tea on fire. He said, then they put sugar in it to make it sweet. Then they put ice in it to make it cold. Then they put lemon in it to make it sour.
Say that again.
You boil the tea to get it hot to make tea, right?
No, you make it, you said it made sour with what, boiling it?
No, you boil the tea, then you put ice in it to cool it down.
Okay, what about the sour?
You put sugar in it to make it sweet, then you turn around and add lemon to it to make it sour.
Right, that's how you make it.
Why? Why not?
So now I'm stupid and you don't even know how to